Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Big Bang and Creationism podcast. My name's Robert, and before I begin, I'm just going to give myself a brief introduction. I'm 17, I live in Washington State, and I have an interest in cosmology and the creation-evolution debate. So let's get into the first question. What is the Big Bang? The Big Bang is a scientific theory about the origin of the universe. Now, it tells us that the universe was once in a very hot, dense state, and this is because we can see galaxies moving away from us, and we can then infer that a long time ago they were once closer together. And you take it far back enough, and once we were in this very, very, very tiny, tiny state. The Big Bang also explains the origin of the light elements in a process known as Big Bang nucleosynthesis. Now, the elements that were formed during this process were helium, hydrogen, deuterium, and lithium. And they all contain very few protons and electrons. And this is because during the earliest years of the Big Bang, everything was so hot that no stable elements past these could form. When everything cooled down, stars were eventually able to produce more stable, heavier elements, and eventually supernovae made most of the elements that we're made of, which is why people say we're made of stardust. So now I'd like to make a point that the Big Bang is not related to the theory of evolution at all. A lot of people have trouble with this because the Big Bang talks about the evolution of the universe. People just need to understand that the evolution of the universe talks about change. Evolution is a word meaning change. However, the theory of evolution deals with the diversification of life on planet Earth. It does not depend on cosmology for its answers any more than chemistry depends on say, the origin of the chemicals. It doesn't care. It still works. So now let's talk about some problems with the Big Bang. Now, these problems that I'm going to discuss right now are solved by another theory known as inflation, which works perfectly with the Big Bang theory. It was invented in 1970 by a bunch of people, Alan Guth and Andre Linde especially. So let's get into the problems. There's a problem known as the horizon problem, which conflicts with evidence that we have today. By that I mean, when we look at the cosmic background radiation, which is a kind of heat map of the universe, we see that things look pretty similar. And the Big Bang doesn't say why this is, because light travels in a finite amount of time. So the universe is currently larger. It's about 26 billion light years in diameter, and light could not have traveled all the way from one side to the other. And so we want to know why things look so similar, if no information could be exchanged between the two. And this is solved by inflation, and I'll get into these explanations of inflationary explanations later. Another problem is the flatness problem. Why does the universe so closely match the geometry that we use every day? I mean, things look flat to us, but we don't know why. And because, well, let me get a little background on the critical density of the universe. The critical density is something that tells us the amount of matter in the universe, and if it's enough to halt the expansion of the universe, or not at all. And if it's more than the critical density, if there's more matter, then the universe will stop eventually expanding and contract into the Big Crunch. If it's less, then it's going to keep expanding forever, and if it's exactly the critical density, it will keep expanding and slowly, 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 slowly stop towards infinity. And so it'll just keep slowing down until it never will stop down. So we want to know why the universe is so flat, because the critical density ties in with the geometry of the universe. If the critical density is more, I mean, if the amount of mass is more than the critical density, then we're going to have a kind of closed universe where the geometry would involve triangles having more than 180 degree angles. I mean, 180 degrees. And if it was less than the critical density, it would have less than 180 degrees for a triangle. But we see precisely that it does contain 180 degrees for all purposes. And in order for the universe to be like it is today, it would have to be about 10 to the 15th power close. So if it was 1, to be 0.99999999999, etc., it would have to be within that amount of the critical density, and we want to know why that is, and inflation, again, gives us the answer. So now let's go into a few problems that aren't explained by inflation. There's one known as baryon asymmetry, which is just wanting to know why there's more matter than there is antimatter. Some people think the universe is just this way and that there was an extra matter particle for every antimatter, because when matter and antimatter collide, they're gone. So if we take a group of, say, 270 matter particles and 269 antimatter, when they all collided, you'd have one matter left over. And of course, there'd be more than one group of these, so you'd have a bunch of matter particles and basically no antimatter left. Then we have a problem with age. You've probably heard about the oldest globular clusters, which are groups of stars, and they've been dated they've been dated older than the universe due to the calculated expansion rate known as the Hubble's constant. And I, for one, think that this will just be resolved in a few years due to, we'll probably have discrepancy in the age and the expansion rate of the universe, and I'm pretty sure this will get resolved. Another issue that is probably going to get resolved in a few years as well is the missing mass. We don't have enough mass in the universe to, halt the expansion that we think is going to happen. And also, we see objects in galaxies on the far end of their galaxies spinning, and we think, without this mass, that they would fly off, but they're staying in the orbit. And well, we're explaining this by matter that we can't see, and before you say, that seems like you're kind of making this thing up, we think we've observed this invisible matter, and that seems kind of odd as well, but when this dark matter that's invisible passes by an object like a star, we see this effect called gravitational lensing, where the further object appears brighter due to the fact that the light is going around this dark matter and kind of making it brighter when it does that. So we've seen a few examples of this gravitational lensing occur, and we think the explanation is the dark matter. So now that I've given you the kind of problems that we know exist at the Big Bang, I'd like to give you some history. All right. So the Big Bang was first contemplated by a Belgian priest named Abbé Lemaître. He said the universe probably came from a primeval atom. This conflicted with the idea that the universe has been here forever. This is a static universe. Even Einstein thought the universe was static. However, when he formulated his relativity theory, he found that the universe must expand unless he kind of made up this factor, and unless the cosmological constant, which stopped the universe from expanding, and so it was kind of balanced out, and nothing expanded, and it was here forever then. Alexander Friedman, however, found the universe should expand by using Einstein's relativity equations. And finally, in 1929, Edwin Hubble found the observational evidence we needed to verify that the Big Bang had indeed occurred. He found that galaxies were moving away from us, and their expansion rate corresponded with their distance. So closer galaxies moved away slower, further ones moved faster away. Despite this evidence, a group of people known as steady-state theorists came up, and they said that the universe still had to be static. And how they kind of explained the expansion away was that, okay, so we do have expansion, but matter continually forms within the rifts created by the expansion, so we're constantly having matter put there, and so the universe can be as old as we want to because this matter's been doing it the whole time. The problem is they never really gave an explanation for why this matter just appears. As for the name of the Big Bang, who named it? And the answer is a man named Fred Hoyle. He was talking on BBC Radio in the 50s, I believe, and he kind of wanted to try to make the theory out to be really stupid, and he told his audience that it was a big bang. And however, the name stuck, people liked it, and it's, of course, been with us to this present day. You might be thinking, with all these problems that I presented with the Big Bang earlier, how can it be the theory of the origin of the universe? And the answer is that there's overwhelming evidence in favor of the Big Bang. I'll start with the cosmic background radiation. This radiation was first predicted by George Gamow, Ralph Alford, and Robert Hermann in the late 40s. They reasoned that because the universe is in a hot, dense state in 13 billion years ago or so, that now, as it expanded and it cooled, that we should still have some remnant left over from this initial period. It'll be very cold, but there still should be something that we can pick up. Their work was forgotten for about 20 years, and it was picked up then by Robert Dickey and Yakov Zeldovich of Princeton in the 60s. They decided that they should try and test this and see if it was actually there. Meanwhile, at Bell Labs, Arno Penzias and Robert Wilson were working on an antenna, and they found that they were picking up some strange static. And they wanted to know what the static was. They tried to eliminate all the factors. There was the city, of course, that could be presenting a problem, the antenna itself, which they supercooled to eliminate that factor, and also pigeons that were defecating in the antenna. They cleared out the pigeons and cleaned out the antenna and still found that they were getting this problem. And finally, someone called Robert Dickey of Princeton and, you know, let the group know what Robert Wilson and Arno Penzias were doing, because Arno and Robert didn't have any idea what was going on. They didn't know that they had just found the cosmic background radiation, and Robert Dickey and Yakov Zeldovich, of course, were ecstatic that they had found this, but they were also upset that they hadn't been the ones who had discovered it. So we now have the heat map of the universe that can only logically be explained by the Big Bang. Steady-state theory tried to explain this, but their explanation was not accepted at all because it wasn't as logical as the Big Bang's explanation. Next is, of course, the expansion of the universe. Why would a static universe be expanding? Logically, if something was expanding in the past, it must have been contracting. I mean, if we reverse the picture, it was contracting, so it must have had a beginning. So that kind of gets rid of the whole steady-state idea of a static universe. The last really strong prediction is the light elements. This is the Big Bang nucleosynthesis I was talking about earlier. The Big Bang can predict how much of each element we should find, and we've found that their predictions match very accurately with the observational evidence today. So these three strong evidences for the Big Bang pretty much verify that it occurred. Any other theory, there's things like plasma cosmology you might have heard of, and steady state, of course. These cannot explain the evidences with the kind of simplicity that the Big Bang does. So, how does this tie into creationism? I'm just going to be discussing young Earth creationism because it's the one that really affects the age of the universe based on their view. Young Earth creationism believes that the Earth and the universe is 6,000 years old. They get the Earth 6,000 years old by adding up the genealogies in the Bible based on their literal interpretation and find that the Earth should have been created around 4004 BC. And because creationists tend to lump the universe and, the Big Bang theory and evolution together, they also then predict that the universe should be around 6,000 years old. And this is obviously in confliction with the 13.7 billion year old universe that the Big Bang predicts. So, a little background on my interest in this debate. It was probably when I started visiting a Christian forum that had a whole section for discussing the creation-evolution debate. And there I was able to learn a lot about evolution, a lot about creationism, and of course, because I had known a lot about physics and cosmology, and those are my interests, I also started making posts on what the Big Bang is all about, and why scientific evidence verifies it. So now I'm pretty active about discussing this. I'm always talking about it at my school with people who are interested. I'm really against the teaching of this kind of creationism to our youth. Lots of people think that we should teach the controversy, but they really don't know that there is no controversy among the scientists. 95% of them, basically, even in those who aren't in relevant fields, oppose the teaching of creationism in public schools. About 99% of biologists accept evolution instead of creationism. But the majority of public seem to accept this creationist movement as science. I think this is due to two reasons. One is the part of our schools. The Big Bang and evolution are not really mentioned in our schools. As a high school student, I can let you know that I don't think I've ever heard the Big Bang discussed in a scientific context in the classroom, unless it's, you know, by me giving a presentation on it. And evolution is mentioned in the biology classes, but it's really, there's no detail gone into it, and so people just think they should assume that it's correct. And next is the part of groups like ICR, Institute for Creationist Research, Answers in Genesis, and Dr. Dino, they present their work, they try to present it in a scientific context, and show that they try to demonstrate there's a confliction between the evidence and what evolution and the Big Bang actually show. None of their work, of course, is presented in peer-reviewed scientific journals, but the public doesn't really seem to care. They think their views are the same as any scientist's views. And so this is one of the main reasons why I made the podcast, is I feel the education in this country needs to be buffed. Lots of people have mistaken views about the Big Bang, and I want to get these cleared up so that people can know what science is all about and the fact that creationism is not scientific. So this is basically all I have for the show today. I'm going to go on vacation. I'll be in California for 2 weeks. I'll probably come back January 1st or 2nd. So in the meantime, you can email me with any questions you have about, anything, any comments you have about the show, anything you want to see added, any questions you have about the Big Bang. I could probably include those in the next episode. So my email is rlippens, and that's LIPPENS, at wavecable.com. Again, that's rlippens at wavecable.com. So I hope to be getting your email responses, and I guess I will start forming my next basis for the next show. So everyone, have a good Christmas, and I will talk to you later.